Let's do it.
Right, welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. Joined once again, got the full crew with me here, and it is an action-packed night. Vikings breaking news right before we went on the podcast. But that's not what we're going to start talking about. First things first, let's get the guys on here. JR, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
I'm a little nervous right now, man. It's a tight game, Duke, Carolina. You know, it's a big rivalry down here. Carolina is up 3. With 3 minutes left, so it's a little tight over here right now.
That's what we like, the good guys winning, the good guys winning. Ain't that right, Miles? What's going on with you?
I know, go Duke, man. They'll come back and win this. They got it.
Oh, my God, please.
Blocked, reported for abuse. It's not Miles' fault, though, JR. We got to give Miles a pass on that one. Saxy Prince, man, what's going on with you?
Yo, yo, y'all. I mean, it's good. I mean, I think the offseason is officially here. I get a little bit of rest as far as, like, I was getting really just getting drained as far as, like, football every single week. But, you know, I'll need a few weeks rest, and then I'll get back to the old grind. So,
Why does Prince sound like he's a 10-year vet? Like, he just had a long season. He's like, man, I need to go to the Caribbean for a couple of weeks. I got to chill out. I'll come back, and I'll be back in that grind. I'll be good to go for next season.
Yeah, Prince will be working 2 jobs this week instead of the usual 3.
Right.
You heard it, man.
But you good, Prince? Like, you know, I mean, you sound even right now a little worn down. You going to be able to make it through the whole episode?
Yeah, I mean, I'm good. It's mostly like, why? I mean, it's funny, the joke, but actually in real life, like, I've just been doing a lot as far as work. My boss is going on maternity leave really soon, so that's kind of been leaving me to run a lot of the show, so that's why I've been a little exhausted.
Okay, all right. Oh. Let's hope that the money goes up with the work.
No, it's not. It's really not. But I also got a pinched nerve. I also got a pinched nerve, and I think in my back, so I haven't been able to sleep for a week and a half now.
You're too young to have these kind of problems, Prince. He really do sound like a 10-year veteran, man.
That's what I'm saying. That Caribbean trip's coming.
Well, you know, even though the Vikings did break some news, you know, a couple minutes ago, we're not starting there because, you know, it was the trade deadline in the NBA and it's the offseason. So in the offseason, we can just talk about whatever we want to. It doesn't have to be all Vikings all the time. It can be, you know, some other stuff with some Vikings mixed in. It'll still probably be mostly Vikings, but, you know, trade deadline happened and, you know, a lot of stuff happened. Unfortunately, like Prince, I was tied up with work for most of the day when all the things were happening, so I really couldn't keep up with it as much as I would like to. Luckily for me, I have sports junkie JR that I do a podcast with. So, JR, I need your takes, man. Let me know what happened today in the NBA, and I guess which stories, which things did you find most funny, most intriguing, which teams close ground on Golden State, if any, and did LeBron start packing his bags today, you know, at the deadline?
Yeah, so obviously there was a lot of action that happened in the NBA today. The biggest trade of the day obviously was Isaiah Thomas going from the Cavs to the Lakers. The Cavs did a lot of – well, they basically cleaned house today, and I thought it was pretty funny. LeBron hit a game-winning shot last night over the T-Wolves. And now a lot of his teammates that he was celebrating with, they actually traded today. So Isaiah Thomas goes with I forgot who else they traded with Isaiah Thomas. No, Channing Frye.
If you look closely, he only cheered with the guys that he knew were staying, yeah. Like Tristan Thompson and some of those other dudes. He was like,
so the guys who signed with his agent.
Yeah. So Isaiah Thomas with Channing Frye, that's who the other guy was, goes to the Lakers. In exchange for Jordan Clarkson. And I forgot who the other person was.
Larry Nance.
There we go. A lot of moving parts. Great pieces that the Cavs needed. They needed some depth on the wings and some people that can defend. These trades were primarily for Golden State, and they actually were looking out for their future as well. These are guys that are under contract for a couple years from now. I know Clarkson just signed an extension with the Lakers, and now he's going to the Cavaliers, so they have him under contract for a little while. Another trade that happened involving the Cavaliers was Iman Shumpert going to the Kings, but we know he's pretty much irrelevant at this point. I thought the funniest trade of the day by far was them shipping D. Rose to Utah. So what makes this so funny is that Derrick Rose took a personal leave of absence about a month ago, and come to find out he secretly got married while he was away. He didn't tell anybody. It was just him and his, you know, his now wife. And they went and got married at this secret location. And he told everybody about this when he got back. And so everybody is saying that the Cavs thought so highly of him and this marriage that they shipped him to Utah. And I just thought that was hilarious.
Oh, man.
I just thought that was hilarious.
Who else did they send to Utah?
Jay Crowder.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and Jay Crowder promised his mother that he was going to get a ring. And now they shipped him to Utah, where obviously that's not going to happen.
Cold world, man.
Yeah, cold world. Yeah, it definitely was a cold world. And who knows? D. Rose will probably end up in Minnesota with this old coach, Tom Thibodeau. The Jazz are probably gonna buy him out. And Wolves Twitter wasn't too hot about that idea. So
I know Miles is excited about it, though. Miles, you excited, right? D. Rose been working on that jump shot, right?
Well, we'll talk about the Cavs. The Cavs are planning for life after LeBron. I mean, let's be real. They're like, we'll load up for this season. Let LeBron take us to another championship. And Dan Gilbert's like, I'm about to sell a team anyways. So blow it up for the future by LeBron. But yeah, the Timberwolves are killing me just for the fact that it sounds like they had a lot of offers on the table. They basically just had to give up the first round pick that they have from the Oklahoma City Thunder, protected one. But they do not seem keen on getting rid of it. But they really need 3-point shooting, and they didn't do that. And now it looks like they're going to go after Derrick Rose, which helps not at all. So I don't know what the plan is there. So I'm a little disappointed with that. They need a lot of help in that sense on the depth. You know, guys like Shabazz Muhammad aren't even playing. They need to add some help. So I'm a little disappointed in that. But they did play a great game last night against the Cavs, even though they lost. The trade deadline, though, in general was fun. Emmanuel Mudiay went to the Knicks after poor guy. Normally, you'd kind of be excited for that. But with Porzingis' injury, you know, it's kind of not as exciting anymore for this season.
Yo, Prince, you said you checked out of sports a little bit there. You've been busy with work, and, you know, doctor said you need a bacchiotomy and all sorts of other stuff. But were you able to keep up with anything? Were there any trades that you enjoyed today?
I'm dead at bacchiotomy. But, no, I kind of loosely followed it. I was actually really shocked at the Isaiah Thomas trade, just because I think I respect Isaiah Thomas. I respect his game. I think, you know, maybe if LeBron had moved on, they could think about building around Isaiah Thomas for the future. But I mean, clearly him just being hurt all season long was enough for them to be like, we've seen enough. We don't want him here. So, that was really the only thing that I guess I was shocked by. I agree with Miles. I was kind of hoping that the Wolves will make maybe a move or two, not nothing too splash, but just get themselves like a consistent shooter. Definitely maybe shore up some more defense, because like after watching that Cavaliers and Timberwolves game last night, it was like, obviously they still need help defensively. But yeah, I mean, that's really all I gleaned out of all this. I wasn't really too invested into it, but I still will say, maintain that the NBA, as far as an overall product, runs it way better than the NFL.
Yeah, they coming, man. They coming. But we're going to keep it moving here. I guess, you know, there was some news broken today. Vikings hired Eagles quarterback coach. We've been referred to as Flip, to be the new OC. And Vikings Twitter is very, 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 very excited about this. JR, you've been on Flip for a while now. You've been kind of banging the drum of him as someone that we really, really, really should have been taking a look at even before this past season. So I guess as a, you know, an original Flip supporter, I guess can you enlighten the rest of us and let us know kind of why you are so excited about the possibility of him coming and what it is that you expect for him to bring in terms of style of offense, play calling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so I first became a fan of Flip back in about 2014, I believe it was, after seeing what he did with Derek Carr. Touchdown to interception ratio was very impressive. I think Carr ended up with about 21 touchdowns and like 11 or 12 interceptions that year. That was during his rookie season, which wasn't impressive. Anytime a rookie comes in and produces like that right off the bat, I think that's very impressive. And the coach behind all of that actually was John DeFilippo. He's known as a quarterback whisperer. He's had tremendous work with Derek Carr, as I mentioned, and we've all seen what he's done with Carson Wentz and now Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles, just like we all predicted before the season. But anyway, back when he was with the Browns in 2015, that's his only stint as a play caller or as an offensive coordinator. He had Josh McCown and Johnny Manziel, got a lot out of them. McCown had one of his better years, and we all know Johnny Manziel had a brief stint where he did play at a decent level, and John DeFilippo was behind all of that. What he will bring to the table is your traditional West Coast modern style of offense, your offense that takes advantage in the passing game, the short and intermediate routes. He picks and chooses when he does take his shots down the field, but his offense isn't really reliable on those chunk plays. Like we've seen with Pat Shurmur's offense, it's more of a kind of it'll lull you to sleep. And then before you know it, he'll take his shots over the top. And he's very creative. It's a mixture of spread concepts and West Coast concepts. He's extremely aggressive, as we all saw, especially him learning under Doug Peterson. Now, he'll obviously transition or keep that aggressive mold as long as it's okay with Mike Zimmer. So that's just some career highlights of him and just a brief glimpse of what he can bring to the offense.
All right. Because last time Miles yelled at me, so I'm not going to make any assumptions here. So, Miles, Yanka, but we started with Miles. Do you guys have any strong takes, strong feelings about our new OC?
Well, I mean, I think it's a good hire. I think he was the best option available. I think it kind of is telling on what this offense's direction needs to go, because we on the outside didn't know what, if they were to go with, you know, Kevin Stefanski, what kind of system was he going to run? They obviously would have, you know, have an idea what the system would be, but you kind of see what was in place with put in place with Pat Shurmur with the zone scheme in the run game and the offensive lineman that we brought in, DeFilippo. I'm probably saying that wrong. he's going to run a similar offense with those offensive linemen and, you know, the run game. Like, it's all going to be cohesive to what we have, and the guys that were put in place with Pat Shurmur, it's going to be an easier transition for him to be able to use those guys and not need to overhaul a lot of the positions that we have on offense. So I think that's a big thing that people need to understand. Like, you know, we brought in guys like Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers for their run game ability, but we brought those guys in because they can move in space a little bit. And, you know, for the screens and the quick game and all that, those guys excel really well at those kind of things. And this isn't going to change that. So that helps a lot. I think it's kind of the only thing I'm like, like everybody else, the quarterback, we don't know who he feels is going to fit best with that. Obviously, he just had the meeting today. Sounds like they just came to agreement today, so I'm sure he'll go to the board and that's plan number one for the rest of this offseason between now and free agency is what moves do we make to go after the quarterback position and to run his West Coast offense that JR is saying. Who does he feel fits that best? And I'm really curious to see who that is.
And what about you, Prince? Where are you at with it? What is your initial reaction of this hire, and have you already gone? Does he have a Wikipedia page?
He does have a Wikipedia page from.
Okay, good stuff. Good stuff.
My understanding. As far as you know, JR was the one that really put us on Filippo. So, you know, obviously looked out for him a little bit more. Kind of, I watched, you know, one of the videos that he put as far as, you know, breaking down what he was doing with the Eagles and how he, you know, kind of reacts with his quarterbacks, which I think is good because we will need, you know, someone who is that kind of that quarterback whisperer. It does feel a little bit like, it does feel a little bit on the fence to say this, but, you know, I think this could go either, you know, either way. You know, it could be a fantastic hire, you know, like, Vikings offense, you know, remains really competitive because of what DeFilippo can do. At the same time, you know, it is a little bit of a gamble. You know, it could, you could see the offense regress, you know, this season just because of, you know, new system, new players that are coming on board. You know, obviously the quarterback's decision is going to be huge. And, you know, DeFilippo is going to be a huge component of choosing that quarterback. You know, whether it be the one of the three that's here right now or another guy that, you know, we're not either talking about or not talking about, I think that's going to be hugely on the shoulders of obviously Zimmer, you know, Spielman, and then now DeFilippo too. So I am cautiously optimistic just because I do think that he is a really good offensive mind. But I do want to pump the brakes as far as, you know, people, you're thinking that this for sure means the Vikings are going to be a top 10 offense again this season.
I'm glad you used that word because that's one of the things that I think that tends to get lost as we roll over the NFL from one season to the next is that, you know, teams that are hyper efficient, especially offensively, you know, 1 year, and especially in the case of the Vikings where there isn't stability at quarterback. I mean, it's natural that the Vikings, regardless, like if we kept the whole band together, even with Shermer, the likelihood was that, you know, the Vikings performance was going to regress a bit, especially given that we went from playing a relatively, you know, easy schedule from like an offense and like fantasy football type perspective to, you know, playing a more challenging, at least right now, looking to be a more challenging schedule on paper at this point. So, you know, it's a tough spot for Flip to come into right now with as good as we were this past year. He's coming in with these big shoes to fill, but we are going to be playing a tougher schedule. And I think that's one of those things that we do need to keep in mind as we move forward is that, you know, we need to ground our expectations at least a little bit because, we're not going to be playing that. You know, you get good, you got to play a better schedule. You know, we got the Eagles again. We got some other teams that are, you know, a little bit tougher than, you know, the schedule we had when we came into to 2017.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Flip hasn't actually called any plays, really. Or am I getting that wrong?
2015 with the Browns.
He called plays in Cleveland.
Okay, no problem. Just wanted to clarify that.
But, I mean, it was Cleveland. And, I mean, yeah. But, yeah, he called plays in Cleveland.
Did Norv call plays in Cleveland? Okay, let's move on.
No, he said in 2015. That Norv was with us in 2015.
Yeah.
No, I just meant. Never mind. Just move past.
It's all right. We're gonna keep moving. Well, all right. Well, it's the off season, y'all. So you know, during the season, we got the games, we got all these other things, we got you know stuff. I mean, it's the off season. We still got stuff to argue about. But in the off season, we got a little bit more time. We can get a little bit more philosophical with things, talk about theory, and you know, gives you know nerds like me time to dig in and kind of look back on the previous season, dig into you know stats and all those things and. I know I normally get into all that stuff on the pocket protectors with, you know, with Luke and Eric, but there are some things that I looked at that, you know, we've talked about a little bit, but I wanted to get just your takes on them here, where I took Pro Football Focus grades and then, you know, looked across all the teams, all the position groups, correlated the grades by team, and then you looked at them as like points. So obviously, you know, if we go from top to bottom, quarterback is obviously number one. Wide receiver, number two, quarterbacks, three, safety, four, tight end, tackle, running back, linebacker, center, guard, edge rusher, and defensive end. So we've talked a little bit about this before, but I wanted to get you guys in on this discussion a little bit, you know, on the air, recording your thoughts here. And I guess as we look at this, you know, the positions that correlate most strongly with points, I guess first question, and JR, I'll start with you. I guess what stood out for you in terms of, you know, what came in where you expected, which positions seemed to be off, and I guess what were your initial thoughts when you just kind of saw the order that things kind of fell out in there?
I think the biggest thing was edge rusher being so low and then fullback being so high, especially with the way the game has changed at this point. A fullback is obviously not used as much as it once was, even 10 years ago, with it being more of a passing league now. Obviously, fullback was way higher than what I thought it would be. And like I said, edge rusher being so low, we've seen how edge rushers can impact the game, even the Super Bowl this year. So I thought edge rusher would be much higher than what it was.
Yeah, no doubt. And that was definitely what stood out for me as well, was when I was looking at it. But I guess some of what I think explains some of that for me is because I was looking at a full position group for the team. We know the edge rushers, they rotate in and out. So you don't get as much credit for your best guys because they're not playing as many snaps as, say, you know, your starting tackle or center or something like that. Those guys go and they do take breaks. So the great edge rushers that you have are balanced out a little bit by the fact that most teams don't have, you know, two full lines that are great. And so that'll limit some of the impact of your high level, your edge rushers that you have out there. I guess Miles Yenka, outside of edge, I guess, was there anything, or the D-line in general, was there anything that really stood out for you guys in terms of, you know, position groups that were higher than you expected, lower than you expected? And then kind of the next question, because it is draft season, and I'm curious, kind of understanding, you know, which positions kind of align more closely to either points scored or points defended. How would you use this information if you were kind of starting to set a draft strategy for yourself? And Miles, I'll start that one with you.
Yeah, well, I think you're talking about some of the positions that kind of surprise you is definitely the fullback position for me. I mean, I guess I'd also ask, does that include like H-back? Do you know if that's like including that aspect of it, or is that strictly just
H-back has its own value? Yeah, so it's just strictly fullback.
Yeah, so the fullback one, and so for like when I actually do something and sit down and try to write this, fullbacks will probably get pulled out because like JR said, every team doesn't have a fullback.
Right, and that's kind of
H-backs that get, you know, designated as fullbacks.
Yep,
guys like Kyle Juszczyk who are quote unquote fullbacks but are really like tight ends. So it's fullbacks is one that, you know, as I start to look at it, I'll probably just leave those out because every team really isn't using a fullback like that. Some teams are really just using them as pass catchers, which is where I think that the value is being inflated here a little bit, is the fact that really, as you can see, and I know Saxy Prince, you know, will hate this, but it becomes very apparent very quickly when you're looking at, you know, the correlations to points that, you know, very directly the positions that, you know, throwing, catching, or stopping someone from catching the ball are, you know, the most important positions when you're looking at it from a points perspective. And then, you know, right after those, you got, you know, your tackles, which again, most people would look at as being fairly valuable because of their impact, again, you know, in the passing game. And Prince, kind of with that point, I know that, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, success rates and some other stuff like that in the group message. And, you know, you were pushing back a little bit about the idea that, you know, passing league and all of those things. I guess when you look at, you know, the correlations in the positions when it comes to, you know, actually points scored and all of the pass catchers being there at the top of the list, I guess, does that change your position at all? Are you willing to fully embrace the shift of the league towards the pass, or do you still feel like teams need to invest more heavily in the run game?
No, it doesn't change that. And not because I'm being stubborn, but mostly because of some of the, you know, research that I've been doing. I think because of the way that the league is, I think we're the league prioritizes averages, right? Everything that we do as far as looking at stats and stuff usually is some basis of some kind of average, and that's what the league prioritizes. Whereas when you change your kind of your lens as far as, you know, successes, that does make you look at everything a little bit different. And this is kind of how I've looked at it a little bit different this season, is the goal every single down is to essentially achieve or get closer to achieving the next set of four downs, right? And the problem with the mentality of putting it on averages is that you're not always becoming successful with that. You know, someone who might have a high average, we've seen, I'll put it this way. Obviously, it's a little bit easier to be successful towards the run than it is to be successful in the pass. I mean, we see that often enough, right? We see two passes that, you know, are completed, then we see the third one and you punt, which is not successful. Versus you see plenty of opportunities where, you have a run and then you have a pass and then you get enough where the run actually pushes people into, you know, getting that extra set of downs. And then obviously should explain further why more teams should actually run the ball on third and short, as well as run the ball on fourth down as well, too. So as far as that, I'm not against, obviously, the league, what the league has become as far as, like, you know, showing that, yes, passing the football is still as efficient. But I hesitate that teams are going to shift a little bit too much, where they should maybe do a little bit more research as far as, like, these are some of the correlations that you see with, you know, running success rate and how it can impact the way that we do it. Now, investing more in run doesn't necessarily mean paying, like, you know, what Vikings have done for the last couple of years, paying one guy to be the bell cow. But maybe it just means investing in maybe a broader scope of how we run and the players that you choose, the personnel that you choose to bring in to establish that run. Because obviously, if you run the ball really well, and maybe you're not the greatest passing team, you obviously want to find ways to maximize all the things that you do really, really well. And, you know, it's kind of like the essentially, if you're really bad at something, you know, you could try to bring that badness up to kind of this average or medium level. Or you could, you know, just essentially maximize the strengths that you have, which is what a lot of teams have, because it's really, really hard to find a franchise quarterback. So I'm not pulling myself more towards being kind of stuck in, like, run, never pass and run. I'm just more or less saying I think more teams should maybe pull themselves away from just passing the ball all the time and finding more unique ways to, you know, strike a really good balance as far as both.
Okay. When you say balance, I guess, are you talking about balance in terms of, like, number of passes versus number of runs? Or are you saying balance in terms of being able to do both things successfully?
Yeah, I think it's actually way more important to find the balance that achieves success on both sides of the ball. And that's, I guess, that's what I was trying to get at as far as, you know, a team that's not that successful passing the football, finding ways that it doesn't mean that you should pass the ball more if you're not really that good at it. It just means finding the avenues in which you can succeed and maximizing those potentials versus just passing the ball more in hopes that you're going to be more successful, and then vice versa. Like, guys who continue to run more the football more, even though you're in hopes of popping, you know, a really big run in hopes to improving that success rate. I'd much rather just finding ways to maximize either or both at the same time, if you can.
And JR, I mean, the off season is your season. And so when you look at the list, I guess, and you see the order of the positions there, if you were kind of, you know, let's, obviously, it's, you know, Vikings podcast, we talk about the Vikings a lot here. As you're looking at, you know, the positions that are most important from a points perspective, I guess, what positions would you say the Vikings really should prioritize to try to max things out, either offensively or defensively, when you're looking at things?
I still think they need another edge rusher. I just don't like the amount of plays that Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter played last season, but obviously that isn't a high priority on the chart. Edge rusher is towards the end, or the bottom, I should say. Obviously, quarterback should be a priority this offseason, no matter what they do at the position or which guy they decide to keep that is currently on the roster. I think they should draft a guy, whether it's first, second, third, or any round. Honestly, I think they should prioritize quarterback, and we're all believers of drafting the quarterback every other year and treating them like lottery tickets, because you never know when you'll be able to hit on one. So I definitely would say quarterback. I think they still need to add another corner as well. Obviously, that's third on the chart, so it's definitely a high priority. We all know Newman can't play forever. It seems like he's going to come back this year, but they still need, I still think they need that number three outside corner. Newman will probably play primarily more in the slot this year, and he's probably just going to be more of that security blanket in case Mackenzie Alexander struggles in the slot this year. I think they'll give him more full-time reps. So I think they need that number three outside corner that they can develop and also place on special teams to take Tremaine Brock's spot. So I would like to see them definitely draft any of those positions.
Man, that's awesome. And Miles, you know, you had kind of a different look at things, because I think that you were also talking about bolstering, you know, many of the same positions, D-line, you know, edge rusher, things like that. But you kind of were talking about how you wanted, you know, Rick to go after, you know, free agency and before he came to the draft, I guess. Could you expand on that a little bit here and kind of walk through kind of what Miles's perfect offseason looks like, understanding where the Vikings' holes are, but also kind of how those holes kind of stack up when it comes to, you know, points for and points points against for a team?
Yeah, so I mean, I talk about this every year. I think we talk about this in general. The biggest thing going into the draft is you never want to pigeonhole yourself into being forced to taking a position over the best player available. And based off of kind of like the value board and everything like that, obviously quarterback's one. So I always feel like going into the draft, make sure you're going after some of those positions of need through free agency, so that when you get to the draft, you can just take the best possible. So, you know, let's say at pick 30, if the Vikings get the players that they need to in free agency and aren't really pigeonholing themselves into one position, you know, of need, that's maybe not as valuable, like a, let's say, offensive guard. Maybe they fill that need in free agency. Go take a chance on a cornerback, a safety, a wide receiver, a quarterback with that first pick or something like that. Something along those lines. Go after those value positions earlier in the draft, because the hit rates and everything that we've talked about on those, and like you said, the value is so much higher that you can find some better value and better quality later on for like a position like guard, because like you said, it's not as important. So I'm in favor. So I guess my ideal offseason situation with the Vikings is they go address the three tech position in free agency. They go address, you know, you add another veteran guard and you add maybe one more wide receiver. And we know quarterback's going to be figured out in free agency somewhere, somehow. Like, we know that's going to be a possibility, but I think if you go after some of those four positions, you know, you grab a veteran wide receiver, a veteran guard, and a three tech to go with that quarterback, it allows you at that pick number 30 to do whatever you want with however the board falls. And if you need to trade back and collect more picks, I mean, I'm all for that too, because that's even better, because then you're just collecting more opportunities of adding more players and more talent to bring into camp. And that's key, because that's how you build your depth. That's how you build a better roster. And I know Rick's done a really good job of doing that. So I'm all about that. I'm all about addressing what you need to in free agency and making sure that you're not going into the draft, you know, having to take a certain position earlier than you'd probably like to.
And Prince, outside of signing all the running backs to all the money, I guess, what would your ideal offseason look like?
I'm very similar to Miles in the respects where you just have to, you have to fill out the pieces that we are missing. I think it was very, very clear that the offensive line needs to get addressed so that you're not pigeonholed again. But something that I've been, you know, going back and watching the Super Bowl again, was just the need for, you know, maybe more pass rush. You know, the Vikings, you know, we have behind Everson Griffin and Dumeon Hunter, we obviously have Stephen Weatherly. We have Tayshaun Bower. Obviously, we have Brian Robertson. But when you look at, like, our interior, or, you know, even pass rushers behind those guys, you're not really looking at guys who really could step in. You know, if you looked at the Eagles, I mean, it seemed like they were constantly rotating guys, and that's not doesn't seem to be the case as far as the Vikings. I know that they take a fewer snaps. I think they're fourth in you know, defensive snaps from the league. But I still think that the efficacy of, you know, someone like Everson Griffin, who arguably wasn't probably wasn't really that healthy towards the end of the season, you know, could help him to have, you know, less snaps that he's taken throughout the, you know, throughout the season. Or Daniil Hunter, who, you know, has really stepped into being that full-time guy. So trying to see if we can find ways to invest into the defensive line, especially the interior. We don't really have a for sure guy if Linval Joseph needs to miss out a game. We are fairly lucky to have a really healthy defense for the most part this season. I think figuring obviously out that three technique, like what was mentioned before, is important. But really, I'm really looking at some of these like backup roles and rotational guys, you know, even a really consistent safety, you know, behind Harrison Smith and Andrew Sandejo would be really great. Because, you know, if you want to invest in that position in the draft, maybe have a guy for the future that you really want to plug in, that's great. But what concerns me is that we were lucky this year defensively and for the most part on the offensive line, or not offensive line, but offense, as far as pieces around us being being stable. But my fear is that that luck is only going to last for 2017. And 2018, we might face a little bit more adversity. So I definitely want to, you know, attack the defensive line, you know, maybe find another corner if you can. And then I'm really into maybe finding another athletic tight end that can really complement David Morgan and Kyle Rudolph, so that we have, you know, we have a you know, three guys who can really produce at a high level.
I'm glad you put that in the right order too, because Miles was out here on Twitter disrespecting tight end one spark god David Morgan just a little bit ago, talking about us need to bring in athleticism when we got the spark god in the tight end room right now. So yeah, thank you for acknowledging it, Prince. Spark god.
What happened?
Well, all right. Last thing that we're going to talk about today, unless, you know, y'all randomly come up with something that you guys want to talk about before we go. There's a lot of talk right now about, you know, obviously it's the most important position, quarterback, and we don't have one signed outside of Don's boy, Kyle Sloter. What would be worse for the Vikings? And I'll start with you on this one, JR. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the Vikings, you know, spending a ridiculous amount of money, making Kirk Cousins the highest paid quarterback, and how that would be terrible and how it could set a franchise back, you know, looking at the Ravens, Joe Flacco, etc. What's actually worse for a franchise, in your opinion? Spending all that money in free agency and missing on a quarterback, or maybe trading up in the draft to get one, expending a bunch of, you know, present and future draft capital and potentially missing on one? Which one do you think would do more damage to your franchise in the long term?
I think it's overpaying for a quarterback. I mean, I call it the Flacco effect. If you miss on paying a quarterback top dollar, obviously teams structure their contracts very differently for those guys. But you talk about a guy like a Joe Flacco that's keeping that team from adding talent around him. But on the flip side of that, you know, I mean, the Ravens, yes, they are a good team in certain spots, but Flacco's contract is keeping them from adding talent around him. And we saw the receiving corps this year. You talk about guys like Jeremy Maclin and Mike Wallace. Obviously, they swung and missed on Rashad Perryman in the first round. So I think when you miss on quarterbacks like that, it sets back your franchise at least 2 to 3 years, because you're just not able to replenish the talent in certain spots because they're taking up all that money.
It's Miles Yinker. Either you guys feel any different about this? I guess, you know, draft picks or money. Which one do you think is worse for the team to lose over the long term?
I kind of think if you were to trade up and invest the future, you know, multiple first round draft picks, multiple picks in players, and all that kind of stuff could really hurt your overall depth. I know that the money's still there, so you can kind of recoup. But I think they kind of. It's so different. I think it's just different based off of how your roster is structured and is in place at the time of the move, depending on what the move is. Because you see, for a team like the Vikings compared to like let's say the San Francisco 49ers, the Vikings, if they were to go out and invest a lot of heavy money on a quarterback, yeah, they might have a little bit of the cap space, but that could really hurt them in the long run. Whereas a team like the 49ers, they can still go pay top dollar for a quarterback that's kind of unproven, because the way their roster and their cap situation is set up, it's not going to hurt them to make the, you know, to kind of still be able to build through the draft and still be able to make moves to do that. But on the other hand, you know, the Vikings can't, if the Vikings decide to do that, then that's kind of, it like stops them from being able to, you know, make some other, you know, long-term moves too. So I think they kind of, it just varies by each team, basically, in my opinion.
All right. So right now we have JR firmly on the side of the money. Miles, I have him leaning a bit to the draft picks in the future, even though, you know, it is team dependent, but we're going to put Miles on the draft pick side. Prince, you are the decider. Which way are you going with this one?
I guess I'm going to lean with JR and go with the money side of things, just because obviously once that contract is signed, you know, it's really hard for a team to do anything. Even cutting a player, you still miss out on, you know, dead money that just essentially you can't use to get other players. You can't use to do anything else. And obviously that's what's happening with Joe Flacco. You know, New Orleans Saints, obviously with everything that they went through, Drew Brees is, you know, top-notch quarterback, so that, you know, he was able to make up for it. But you know, over the last couple of years, you've definitely seen him not necessarily be the same Drew Brees we knew he was when he was in his prime. So that didn't allow them to get some of the talent that they might have been able to get even this season to maybe make a more competitive push than they did. So I'm leaning towards money. I actually got into this argument on Twitter like 10 minutes before the pod, where I'm like, you know, if you're paying your quarterback $25 million, like, he has to be able to hide most of the deficiencies that exist on your team. And more often than not, it doesn't feel that way, which is why, like, I'm such a huge advocate of paying Aaron Rodgers $35 million a year, because I just want him to completely reset the quarterback market and then have every team be scared to pay a guy like Kirk Cousins $35 million. So I'm leaning money.
Okay. I had actually one more question. JR, did you know the Olympics started?
I had no clue.
All right. Miles, you? Did you know the Olympics started?
Yeah, I did, and I do, but I plan on watching some of it, but it's not. I just don't think it's getting the hype that it should be. But well, whatever.
Okay, so we're gonna start from Minnesota and then work our way down to our brother in the South, Yinka.
Yes, sir.
What of the Olympic sports are you going to be most focused on during during these Olympics? You got to pick one.
I do like ice skating. I think it's actually like really, it's really kind of really similar to gymnastics and the artistry that exists in it. Either that or some kind of like maybe like snowboarding or something, like the half pipe snowboarding that they be doing. So
okay, all right, Miles, how about you, man? You got another one? Winter Olympics. All right.
I was just gonna say I knew that it was the Winter Olympics because me and Miles live in Minnesota, and if you watch people trying to get like out of their houses early in the morning and driving around and walking around and all that stuff, it's our own personal Olympics to just be able to navigate through all this ice and snow most days. So
okay,
once winter hits, Miles, you never stop.
You said you
real
were gonna
talk.
But what sports are you going to be watching, man?
Yeah, I kind of Googled to make sure I knew all of the sports that go on for the Winter Olympics. I mean, it's got to be, you know, bobsled, you know.
I'm dead at bobsled.
Uh-oh.
I think with Yinka,
I don't know what happened. But Miles, you getting a little AOL-ish, so I think – I don't know which room of the house you're recording from this evening, but – Yeah, you're breaking up just a little bit here towards the end of the pod.
No, I think the half pipe, the snowboarding, I'll agree with Yinka, and I think figure skating, probably my top two. And then if hockey went well, yeah.
Okay.
It might not be.
JR, you've had some time to hit the Google machine. What winter Olympic sport are you going to at some point? Because you are a sportsaholic, and at some point you'll be channel surfing, and there will be nothing else on where they're keeping score. When that happens, which Olympic sport will you be looking for to tide you over until the next thing that keeps score comes on the TV?
I'm extremely disappointed. Nobody said curling.
Oh,
I enjoy curling.
It's really big up here, but I've never actually done it or watched it.
Yeah, it's pretty boring on TV, seeing people scrub ice, trying to get a big whatever you call it to land on a certain area, but it's pretty funny.
It's called a stone.
Oh, you talking about curling the sport, man? I thought you were talking about going down to the barbershop and seeing some people
Nope. We're just going to stop you before you go too far down the path, Prince. We're bringing you back. We do it because we love you. All right, we've gone off the rails here. It's the off season. We're not grounded by any games or next game, so I think we'll just call it a wrap here. Yeah, the music is already playing. I can feel that, you know, post production. The music is already playing. As always, I want to thank you all, the fellas, for coming on and recording with me tonight. Listeners, thank you for listening. My name is Jason Brown. This has been the Climbing the Pocket Pod, and we will talk to you all soon. Have a good one.